Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. In vain he prayed for percolation. For weeks he tried to get his transmitter on the air. Days on end he'd hoped to curb refractious volts, amperes and watts. Begged them to listen to reason, implored his oscillator to os, his amplifiers to amp. Would they do it? Not on your grid bias they wouldn't. Daily he became more deeply mired in the sloughs of frustration and uncertainty. Nightly his eyes became more glassy. His frayed nerves jangled with the jitters. And then it came. He'd almost forgotten he'd ordered it. But one morning it came. A copy of the Radio Amateur's Handbook by the headquarters staff of the ARRL. And exactly 17 and a half minutes later, his troubles were solved. Oscillator perking contentedly, push-pull amplifier pushing and pulling as never before, dozens of strong, healthy watts surging up the antenna and out to the waiting world. Other amateurs who heard his signals marveled at their strength, their steadiness, and their excellent quality. The handbook is the biggest dollar's worth in radio. Everything about amateur radio and modern shortwave practice from amperes to Zeppelin. You cannot afford to be without it. Red and gold paper copper available for $1. Stiff buckram binding, $2. Now in its 130,000th printing. Or I guess that's edition. Anyway, that caught my eye. And I'm reading you from the December 1931 issue of QST. That's the ad for the handbook inside the front cover. This particular magazine came to me by a very, very circuitous route. I think I got it when I was back in the Dominican Republic. While I was there from 92 to 96, I had read about another radio amateur in the same job that I'm in. And he was at the time stationed, I think, in Okinawa. And you know, I don't have his name. I apologize. I'll get it eventually here. I'll try to find it when I get to work today. But we both at the time were writing a little column for 73 magazine called Ham Ambassadors or Hambassadors or something like that. This was a Wayne Green idea, and Wayne had this column in the magazine where he asked hams, I think mostly Americans who were living abroad, to write in every month and describe what it's like to be a radio amateur in your particular exotic part of the world. So I was the Hambassador from the Dominican Republic, and I wrote a series of articles about what it was like to be a ham there. And I noticed that there was somebody else writing from, I think he was writing from either Tokyo or from Okinawa. And it was obvious that he and I both worked for the State Department. And so I dropped him a line and told him that we were not only we were fellow ambassadors, and he very kindly sent back an envelope with a couple of old QSTs, including the December 1931 edition that I've just read from. So thanks again for that, old man, and sorry I don't have your name here. It's just you know how it is when you're moving around. Anyway, that brings us to the theme for today, and today is, let's see, February 22nd, 2008. This is Solder Smoke 78. And that quote from QST, it's about fixing stuff. And I've been in the fixing stuff kind of mode here at Italy Zero / November 2 Charlie Quebec Radio. I told you last week about my great joy in putting my old Heathkit HW8 back on the air, and how much fun it was to fix the problem with Q11, the PNP keying transistor that not suddenly but gradually went bad on me. I'm still not quite sure how that works. How does a transistor, a PNP switching keying transistor, go bad? I had the opportunity to kind of watch this one progressively go bad, because it started out as an intermittent problem. It became less and less intermittent, and then it was just dead. And so I'm wondering what, I'm still wondering what the failure mode is on something like that. And I'm kind of disappointed that the worldwide solder smoke community has not chimed in with email messages on how it is that Q11 went toes up. So if anybody out there has any has any ideas on this, fame, fortune, and no sizable prize awaits. But if you send me an email on what happened at Q11, I'm interested. Speaking of HW8s, one of the great things about working on this rig is that there's a vast literature on the HW8 and modifications and improvements to the HW8. Michael Bryce put together a while back a wonderful book, and I'm reaching for it right now, called The Hot Water Handbook, being a collection of articles on the modification of the Heath HW8 QRP transceiver, compiled and edited by Michael Bryce, WB8VGE. I have the second edition, 1986. Very kind ham sent it to me, and I really love this book, and it's very much in the spirit of the HW8. Lots of modifications, lots of fixing, lots of tinkering. It's a great rig for that. And the other place where lots and lots of articles about HW8s appeared was in QRP Quarterly, the Journal of the QRP Amateur Radio Club International. I have a big stack of old QRP Quarterlies here. I often reach to that stack as I'm going out the door on one of those Saturday afternoon trips with the family that you know what I mean. It may involve, usually involves, at least some time spent standing outside a shoe store waiting for usually for the female members of the family to study the shoe situation. You guys know what I'm talking about. And if you've been married for a while, you probably, and you're a true radio amateur, you probably have developed the same rule that I have, and that is never, ever, ever leave the house without at least one piece of amateur radio technical literature in your pocket. I find that sprats are quite good for this, because if you fold them over, they fit quite nicely in one of your pockets. My only complaint about that is that sprat has this very nice glossy cover, so you're prone to lose them, because they'll slide out of your pockets as you're getting into the car or something. And I've lost several like this. I lost one once in on the French Riviera. I think it was on the French Riviera. Yeah, one of our trips I lost one, and the GQRP guys very kindly replaced it. But anyway, getting back to our story. On Friday last week, my wife and I took the day off. It was her birthday, and we decided just to send the kids off to school and go out and explore Rome on our own. And so I stuck in my pocket, knowing that this trip would perhaps involve some shoe store visits, I stuck in my pocket the July 1989 issue of QRP Quarterly, and in there was an article with a title. It was just made for me. It was called "It's Reviving a Dead HW8" by Michael WA8MCQ. From Jessup, Maryland. I've been reading Mike's articles for a long time and really, really like them. But this article had to do with some of the problems in the toroidal inductors in the final LBHW8 and in some of the tuned circuits. And I came across a line here. He was talking about how he was having problems kind of peaking and tweaking some of the tuned circuits in one of his HW8s. And he came up with a line here that I was standing right in front of the Spanish Steps in Rome, one of the most famous tourist attractions in Rome. And I was reading this thing, and I must have laughed out loud, and people must have thought, well, another nutty American. But there I was reading QRP Quarterly in front of the Spanish Steps, as you do. And the line is this, quote from Michael: "The basic, inviolable law of the universe that says any failure will be at the worst possible time and or in the most inconvenient possible manner has a corollary stating that when a coil slug freezes in place for the rest of eternity, it will be nowhere near resonance." That's a good one. I'm going to read that one again. "The basic inviolable law of the universe that says any failure will be at the worst possible time and or in the most inconvenient possible manner has a corollary stating that when a coil slug freezes in place for the rest of eternity, it will be nowhere near resonance." All right, Michael. Yeah, I think that's an important corollary of Murphy's Law, and certainly important to all of us in the homebrew QRP game. So I wanted to share that with you. I forgot to mention that another fun part of my adventure in fixing the HW8 was that the project gave me the opportunity to use that power supply that I built shortly before leaving London. You guys might remember this story. This is a beautiful old homebrew power supply that I picked up at the Kempton Park, my last Kempton Park rally in London, or rally as a hamfest. And I brought it home and it wasn't working, but at the same rally, I had Billy and I had met up with Tony Fishpool, G4WIF, and Tony had given me a book that he wrote with Graham Firth, a G3MFJ, called Simple Test Equipment for the QRP-er. It's a wonderful book. I've mentioned it many times. I think you should get in touch with Tony to get yourself a copy. It's really quite something. I think I have a link for it on the webpage, on the Gadgeteer News webpage. But if anybody needs to know how to get in touch with Tony, he's I think it's g4wif@gqrp.com. I'll check that out. I'll make sure. But anyway, and if you need more information on it, you can certainly get in touch with me, and I'll put you in touch with Tony. But a wonderful book, and in it he's got a great circuit for a variable current control power supply. And it was just the thing I needed. And off I went, and I pretty much gutted this this rig and built the power supply, and it was great fun. It's just fantastic. It's and it was great to use it. So thanks to Tony for the help in that. And it's always great when you get to use a piece of test equipment that you built yourself. And I guess that's one of the other reasons why it was so much fun to put the HW8 back on the air. Also, getting the HW8 back on the air has put me back on CW. So it's just been a really great time here. As soon as that license came through from the Italian authorities, everything started coming together. So I'm back on the air, back on CW, back on QRP, making antennas, melting solder. It's just great. So terrific. Oh, another repair project. Hey, listen to this. Hold on. F5RRL, calling CQ at the low end of 80 meters. And that, my friends, is a Drake 2B with a completely new set of tubes. Oh, man, this was a good one. Not quite as much fun as fixing the HW8. I think I mentioned to you that my loyal, trusty, much-loved Drake 2B that I've had since 1973 had been getting a little bit kind of anemic, kind of deaf on me here. I looked into it, and, God, the tubes in there that I had, they're just a real kind of mishmash of old and new and pulls and stuff that I found at old ham fests and things that I probably changed in 1973. And, you know, we don't have those tube testers down at the pharmacy anymore. You may have noticed that they've been gone for a while. So I don't have a tube tester here. I've been moving away from hollow state and moving into solid state. But anyway, I decided that the 2B needed some more tubes. So I went on to the Antique Electronic Supply, the AES website. I recommend it, highly recommend it. They were really great. In the course of a few minutes, I had placed my order for the 10 vacuum tubes that are used in the Drake 2B receiver. And off the order went, and in record time, I mean, it was like less than a week. There's this box from Antique Electronic Supply on my desk in the embassy, and happy day, an opportunity to breathe new life into a Drake 2B communication receiver from the R.L. Drake Company of Miamisburg, Ohio. And I got up earlier than usual yesterday morning. And when you're in the radio game, you know, insomnia has its advantages. I don't really have insomnia, but just lately I've been getting up a little bit earlier than usual, which is pretty early. So here I was at O-Dark 30, and I said, man, it's time to retube that Drake 2B. So I did the tubes one at a time, of course, because you want to find out which one was causing the deafness, you know. Because you want to keep the old ones, because you want to have available a stock of working tubes so that the next time you have this problem, you can reach into the box and grab your Drake 2B working tube collection. And anyway, I went through one at a time. It was V2. It was the first mixer that had gone soft on me. And so I replaced that. I replaced them all. So now I've got a completely new set of tubes in there. I got to chuckle because all the tubes that came from Antique Electronic Supply were what's called new old stock, you know, old stuff that has never been used. These are not pulls. They weren't in any other. They were never used, but they were produced a long time ago. So in the Boat Anchor radio game, they're referred to as NOS or new old stock. And they all came in these nice, colorful, you know, boxes from RCA and from other companies. And I knew that I was doing something that is a bit kind of out of fashion or from another era, when a lot of the tube boxes had written on them, "Made in West Germany." West Germany, yeah. That's going back a bit, guys. And I'm sure the tubes went back much further than the fall of the wall, but anyway, in they went, and now the Drake 2B is really come alive, and it's really sounds great. I've been using it. I have crystals in it, so I can listen to the 17 meter and 30 meter work bands, and that's great fun. And anyway, it's great to have the 2B back. The S meter is kicking up nicely, and I've been having great fun with it. Also been having great fun on the air, not only with the HW8, but also with my homebrew double sideband 20-meter rig. If you look at the picture on the Gadgeteer.news, the Gadgeteer News website, you'll see a picture of the current shack configuration. And I have, right above the 2B, the homebrew portable 20-meter DSB transceiver with crystal resonators in it, with ceramic resonators in it. This thing tunes from, 14.266 up to 14.322 megahertz using two different combinations of ceramic resonators. And it puts out about 1 watt nice and clean, or 10 watts not so clean with my still-to-be-perfected outboard 10-watt linear amplifier using an FET. But anyway, I had this thing here, and I was listening around with it, and I heard a couple of local Rome hams talking on 20 meters when the band was pretty dead. So I figured I'd give them one of them a call, and I spoke to Fabio, Italy Kilo Zero, Golf Nancy, India. And he's on the other side of Rome, but we had no problem having a real nice a nice QSO on 20 meters with in phone, and he could hear me just fine with my 1 watt to the 30 gauge wire, and it was just great to get on the air back on phone using the homebrew DSB rig, and Fabio and I have now an arrangement. I could send him an SMS message, and we can get back on the air. And I got to clean up this little amplifier. It's obviously not putting out a clean signal, so I got to work on that. And then lots of contacts, of course, with the HWA. It seems like anytime I sit down in front of the rig, even with my little tiny 30 gauge sloper antenna out the window, I'm making contacts pretty much all over Europe, mostly on 80 meters in the morning. The other great thing that happened in the ham radio world for me last week was I finally met up with local hams and got to visit a meeting of the Rome chapter of ARI, the Italian Radio Club. And it was really great. The way this happened was, I think I mentioned that on the HW8, the first weekend that I had it fired up, there was this enormously strong signal coming in. I almost had to disconnect the antenna just to be able to demodulate it. It was so strong. It was Gianfranco, Italy Zero, Zulu Yankee, who I QRZ.com'd him, and then I Google Earthed his address and found out that he was located within a kilometer or two of my house, and sent him an email message, and we got to talking on the phone, and he said, let's go down to the local radio club. So last Saturday, he came by and picked me up, and he had with him Giorgio, Italy Zero Yankee Radio, and the three of us drove down to the drove across Rome to the radio club meeting, and it was really great. It was I told Gianfranco in Georgia that I've been in radio clubs in many different parts of the world, many different countries, and you know, in a certain sense they're all the same. They all have the same kind of stuff around, the old piles of old magazines, the collections of QSL cards, the certificates from contests and events from days gone by. This club, like many others do, has a very nice little kind of museum or a collection of old gear there. Everybody was really, really, really great and very nice to me, and so I thanked them all. And I also got to visit the shacks when we came back. We visited the shacks of Giorgio and Gianfranco, and both very interesting operations. We had to help Giorgio put up his tower. He had a four-element quad up on the roof of his house here in Rome, but a windstorm knocked it down. So he's in the process of replacing it. I think he's going to put up a two-element quad. But the tower, he had this kind of tilt-over, crank-up tower. Huge thing from my perspective. Of course, I mean, I'm using 30-gauge, one little piece of 30-gauge wire. So this kind of huge, heavy tilt-over crank up tower is kind of completely at the opposite end of the antenna spectrum for me. But anyway, the three of us climbed up to onto Giorgio's roof, and managed to get the tower in the vertical position, and hopefully it'll be soon be sporting a two element quad. These guys are serious DXers, and Gianfranco has a beautiful station. He took me up to see it and see his antenna. He's got a great location on the top of one of Rome's hills, and I mean at the top, guys. This is really fantastic. And we went out onto the roof, and he's got, you can see the horizon in all directions, and shooting out over Rome. He's got a great two element quad up there. He's got a multi band dipole for the lower bands. And one of the really interesting things about Gianfranco's shack is that he has in it a fully automatic linear amplifier called the Expert 1KFA, and it's his own design, and he is now manufacturing these things and selling them all over the world. It's completely automatic. It's the smallest in the world. It's got a built-in power supply and automatic antenna tutor. It's one of the most technologically advanced in the world. It's got two CPUs in it, a Pi-L output circuit, fully automatic, allows easy connection to all models of ICOM, Yaesu, and Kenwood for immediate management of the bands, the tuner, and the antennas. And he's got advertisements for it on the air. I think you guys would be interested in it for many different reasons. The technology itself is very interesting, and the website, I'll try to put this up on the Gadgeteer News site, but it was really neat to see somebody who's taken his idea and his design and turned it into a nice commercial product, and he's using one in his own shack, and that's great. So thanks very much to Gianfranco and to Giorgio for letting me visit the shacks and taking me down to the club. I'm going to get both these guys up to my shack here. I think they're going to be shocked at the at what life is like at the at the other end of the power and sophistication spectrum. Certainly the other end of the antenna spectrum also. Let's see. Hey, I wanted to mention we've been doing a little traveling around Italy. We were up in Firenze, known to most of you as Florence, and we went up there Monday and Tuesday. Had a great visit. Did all the did the museums and all the great sites of some of the great sites of Florence. Billy and I went to the Science Museum up there, which is really fantastic. It's all the Renaissance science and all that, and there was a great section in there on electrostatic machines, the electrostatic generators, these big things where they had cranks that would, you'd crank it around and this big glass or porcelain cylinder would rub, and they would rub against something that would produce big static electricities, enormous laden jars and all that kind of stuff. So we were inspired, and when I got home I pulled out my copy of the book Homemade Lightning, which details how to build these kind of things, and so Billy and I may be soon building more Van de Graaff generators and Tesla coils and things like that to make some really big sparks here, because, well, it's fun. All right. Now it's time for...
Sorry, smoke mailbag.
I love them.
Indeed. Awesome it is. Lots of really good mail and messages coming in this week. Let's see. First, we got a really nice note from West, W7ZOI, and I usually don't mention all the details of Wes's messages, but I'm sure he'd have no objection to me talking about this one. And he was responding to my noting that Pat Hawker, G3VA, is going to stop writing the technical topics column in Radcom, and It says here, it was sadness tempered with gratitude that I felt when I heard your announcement about Pat Harker's column in RadCom. G3VA is a call I'll always remember, even though I've never met him. I corresponded with him a time or two and was pleased to have made it into his TT book, a technical topics book, several times. Like you, I absolutely love those books. Those early technical topic books had a very real impact on what I chose to write about in Solid State Design. Doug was with me on this. I never did get RadCom, but often thought of doing so and read it when I had a chance. My general feeling is that Pat's technical topic column was the finest contribution to the technical side of amateur radio that there has ever been. It just does not get any better. We all owe Pat a great thanks for a job wonderfully done. That's from Wes Hayward, W7ZOI. High praise indeed, and well deserved. So if anybody in the UK is in contact with Pat and could share those kind remarks from Wes, please do. And if you want to, let me know, and I'll forward you the email. I think Pat would really like hearing that. I know he put a lot of work into that column over the years, and I'm sure he'd know that it was held in such high regard by Wes and by Doug DeMoor. So thanks for that, Wes, and hopefully we'll be able to pass that on. Wes also sends me an email that our friend Jeff Dam, WA7MLH out there in Salem, Oregon, has been producing more videos, and I mean great videos. He did a couple videos on stuff that he picked up at the Rick Rial Hamfest, and really, really good stuff. Made me very jealous, made me think that I should give up Rome and move to Salem, Oregon, so I can go to the Hamfest. And there's also a great video that, in effect, has kind of a band sweep segment on it, on a band imaging receiver that that Jeff recently built. So I'll put the links up. They're all on YouTube, and if I forget or if you're in a hurry to look at them, just go to YouTube and search for WA7MLH, and you'll find all of his videos. He's putting more and more of them up there, and they're all very good, so check it out. Tony, G4LLW, writes in and points out that, well, another victim of the neck, guys. Tony says that Sir Clive Sinclair, of Sinclair Computer fame, many of you guys know about the Sinclair computers, some of the early computers, and Sir Clive is an inventor, invented many things. I just did some Googling on him, and he's a very creative, prolific inventor. But Tony says that he's been a long-time fan and of Sir Clive, and that he has diagnosed Sir Clive Sinclair as a victim of the knack. We took a look at the material here, Tony, and we confirm your diagnosis. It's a definite case. It's all the standard symptoms are there. The early interest, the taking things apart, the interest in radio and electronics, the fascination with components. Yeah, it's a classic case. And so if you're in contact with Sir Clive, you might want to let him know that we understand why he's been doing these crazy things all through his life. Don, K6WH, writes in from San Diego with a really, really nice message. And he lets me know that I'm not the only one using 30-gauge wire for antennas. He faces similar kind of neighbor concerns and covenant issues where he is. And 30-gauge wire has allowed him to get on the air without riling up the neighbors. He gives a great idea. He says that, you know, one of the ways you can overcome the physical frailty of the 30-gauge wire is to use it in conjunction with a monofilament fishing line. You use the fishing line as the physical support. The fishing line will be stronger, won't break as easily, and you just sort of wrap the 30-gauge wire, or you let the 30-gauge wire hang from the fishing line. great idea there, Don, and it might form part of my upcoming next round of modifications to the antennas here. Don also, and I love these kind of emails because when you do a podcast like this, you always wonder where people are listening to it, and it goes out all over the world, and I know we have listeners all around the world, and that's one of the fun parts of this. But sometimes people physically take it with them. It's not that they log on from a remote location, but they put it in their MP3 players or they put it in their iPod, and then they carry it with them to exotic locations. And Don recently carried episodes of Solder Smoke to South Africa, where I think he was there on a combination business and pleasure trip, but at one point he was on safari out in the bush in South Africa and said that he was there listening to Solder Smoke at fireside out there next to the campfire, under the South African skies, under the Southern Cross. So what better place to listen to Solder Smoke than that? Thanks for sharing that with us, Don, and happy trails there. Jim, AB3CV, wrote in and very kindly offered to help me out and do some computer analysis of the proposals that I have for my stealth rooftop antennas. And so I sent him some data on what I'm thinking about it in terms of the antenna, and he's going to crunch it in the computer and see what they say, what it says. I think I've got a pretty good plan. Maybe I'll tell you more about it in the next episode. Right now, it's time for us to go to part three of our talk with our correspondent from in Dubai, Ron Sparks, AG5RS, and here's part three of our conversation. I know you guys have been enjoying this, and I hope I get a chance to talk to Ron again real soon. So we'll go back to the EchoLink two-way portion of the show, and here we go.
M0HBR, this is AG5RS.
AG5RS, M0HBR. Okay, Ron. Well, interesting. Yeah, the spider wire sounds great. And then I have some 26-gauge magnet wire here, but this stuff it's got no tensile strength at all. Somebody else mentioned to me that I should try to use a real good alternative is real thin welding wire, TIG wire, and that's been used. I would love to be able to put some TV twin lead off the side of the roof down into the window, but it's just not gonna happen. I'll tell you why. It's kind of a cultural thing. All over Rome, there are apartment houses where each one of the residents has decided to do that. In other words, everybody goes up to the roof. Everybody puts up a VHF, UHF antenna and perhaps a satellite dish. And then everybody throws a wire off the side of the roof down to their particular window. You can imagine what this looks like. It looks like some sort of strange Martian spider has descended on the building. And the thing is now completely wrapped in these wires that are just floating around and blowing in the breeze. This place was kind of, I guess, refurbished and gentrified, I guess, about 5 or 10 years ago. And nobody's told me this, but given that there is not one single wire of any kind coming off the roof, and that they've pretty much gone with common use antennas, which is smart, of course. I'm guessing that somewhere along the line, somebody just put a big no on the idea of throwing wires off the side of the building. Now, of course, I'm planning on breaking that rule. But this really leads us to the need for extreme stealth. And I think that it'd be real hard for me to hide the twin lead. But I mean, I could even go with the. I mean, if it was just a matter of connecting the thing to the, to connecting the wire up on the roof to the shack, it's not going to be. It's not. It's just going to be hanging there. It's just going to be a very little thing coming down. So I think that might be the most that I could get away with here. But now, let me ask you about another option I have. Up on the roof, they have the building is sort of divided into three or four different sections. And going laterally across the roof, they have big metal fences, kind of wrought iron or steel fences that go from one side to the other. Not lengthwise, but widthwise. I wish they were lengthwise, but they're not, but they're widthwise. And one of the things I thought about doing was, when I get my little bit of clandestine wire up there, instead of just running a wire along the base of this fence, would be to just sort of clean off one little end of it, and with a C-clamp, hooking up the little wire to that thing, and using that fence as the antenna itself. Now, I'm assuming, of course, that this fence is not at any point connected to the rebar in the building, which would ground it. Assuming that it's just floating up there electrically, that might be an antenna, Ron. What do you think? AG5RS M0HBR.
Yeah, somebody once told me a dummy load is an antenna if you put enough power into it. I actually made a nice QSO one time from Houston to West New Mexico, which is, 1,500 kilometers or 2,000 kilometers, and the guy that I was doing the QSO with said that he had hooked his rig to a barbed wire fence just to see what it would do, and tuned it up, and we had a real nice 10-meter contact. So, try it. Why not? If you want to get sophisticated with all this, and one of the things I have done in the past is I bought a copy of Roy Llewellyn's EasyNet, which is a great program, and if you're going to spend money as a ham, you really could spend a lot on worse stuff. Because EasyNet, once you kind of learn it, is beautiful for getting the links close on a deal like you're talking about. If you're just going to use a long wire that is magnet wire to the roof, and then either magnet wire or spider wire across the top and what have you, finding those links and getting them correct and modeling it on your computer for, I don't remember what it was, it was less than the cost of most accessories. And it really is a useful tool. I've made some really nice antennas that just a little bit of a change, like the angle that you move or where the ground is, would completely invalidate the antenna, and you find that out when you do the model. Plus, you learn an awful lot about antennas themselves when you model. So anybody that has the knack, I would urge them to find a good modeling program and save up for that instead of that extra USB-driven flashlight or something. You'll find the modeling program a lot more useful and able to get you out of some pretty interesting binds like it sounds like you're in there. I also appreciate the when people go to the trouble of cleaning up a system, they sure are reluctant to let anybody break that down. So, like I say, model it a little bit if you can, and if not, just try it. See what it does. AG5RS, M0HBR.
Yeah, AG5RS, M0HBR. Yeah, well, yeah, EasyNeck. I've been meaning to use it. I know it's a great program that Roy did. We have to. I think you've just launched me into another adventure with simulation programs. I had a long bout with LT Spice. These are other symptoms of the knack, a fascination with circuit simulation and antenna simulation programs. But I guess I do need to get EasyNeck going here. Yeah, the The other reason I think that I don't want to mention amateur radio at all is that it's immediately gonna, I know, or amateur radio or antennas or shortwave antennas, it's immediately gonna conjure up images of other ham radio antennas that are on top of apartment houses in Rome. Rome is certainly in a center. It's almost completely apartment houses. There are very, very few private houses. I don't think there are any in the center. It's unlike London. London, we were in the center of London and had a private house there, but not here. Rome, and this goes way back. Even in ancient Rome, they were living in ancient Rome 2,000 years ago. They were living in what we would call apartment houses, up to six stories high. Amazing, but yeah, that's the way they've always had it here, and it's always been set up that way. So this is an old problem. Well, I mean, an old situation. I'm sure they weren't dealing with log periodic antennas back then. But when I ride around town here, there are brave radio amateurs who have put up, I mean, really big towers and beam antennas up on top of these six-story apartment houses. Man, I'm telling you, I think they're beautiful antennas, of course, but I think, man, that must have caused one horrendous battle with the neighbors, because we're not talking about a little vertical with a couple of invisible radio wires here. We're talking about a big tower with a big rotator with tri-band Yagis up there, and I think I may even have seen a log periodic up there. And there are quite a number of these things. So, you know, with big, thick, heavy guy wires, you know, it almost looks like it's in a breeze, it could tilt the whole building over. I imagine that as soon as I use the words antenna, shortwave, radio, amateur, that would be the vision that would pop into my neighbors' heads. And, we don't want that. So I think clandestine is the way to go. Here's another thing I want to ask you about. I was telling my wife, this is the one, I mean, I love Rome and everything, but I've never felt so constrained about antennas. In all the places that we've lived, this is the toughest one. And even within the house, I mean, for me to get from the shack to the universe out there, I have to go out through the living room. Now, I can't just string the coax through the living room. The family would object. As much as I'd like to put a big RG8 cable right across the bottom of the floor and tack it down with duct tape, these are what the ham instincts tell you to do. You have to kind of suppress these feelings. So I decided I was going to run something around the base of the floor, and I didn't have a whole lot of coax on hand, and the coax I did have is the wrong color, and it was a mess. I just went down to a little electrical supply shop, and I asked him what he had in terms of coax for the cable TV systems and for the satellite antennas, and they had some pretty cheap coax, 75 ohm. I asked him to let me look at the box. I looked at the box, and it's this cheap stuff. It's got a white kind of poly covering on it. It's got some sort of vinyl dielectric core there. It's got a copper center conductor. And then for the braid, it's got a combination of wire and foil. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. And I looked at it, and it said that for 100 meters, the loss was 4.6 dBs at 50 megs. And I only needed about, I guess, maybe 30 meters total to get to the window. And I'm not going to be operating anywhere near 50 megs. I'm looking at something. I'm hoping to operate at 3.5 and 7. So what do you think about the use of that coax? Aesthetically, it's good because it doesn't kind of... It does blend in with better than the old RG RG58, 59 that I really don't even have on hand anyway. What do you think about that coax, Ron? AG5RS, M0HBR.
M0HBR, this is AG5RS. I personally think that if you're talking about a magnet wire to the roof and trying to broadcast with ungrounded fence, that a couple of dB of mismatch between 50 and 75 ohms is going to be the least of your concerns. So I would jump on it. As a matter of fact, when you first started your discussion, I was thinking, oh, yeah, I've seen some of that satellite cable that's white. And if you take that and just a little bit of silicone cement, you can tack it at the top of the baseboard that generally runs around most homes, and it's very unobtrusive that way. I've been running wires around the baseboard for most of my life, and that really works well. So I shoot, yes, go for it, and then don't worry about it. One other little quick aside, back to EasyNet. I'd like to recommend one other thing to you. If you actually get into EasyNet and are really enjoying it and looking at a lot of different antennas, there's another product on the market called NecWinSynth, NecWinSynth. And that program, although they also sell a product that's a competitor to EasyNet, they have a modeling program where you can input different parameters, and it builds a full wire grid model for you. So, like, if you want a parabolic antenna, you just put in the diameter and the F to D ratio, and boom, it spits out the NEC2 wires file that's necessary. They've even got vehicles. If you have a minivan or a pickup or a car, it'll model that. So if you get into mobile antennas and where's the best place and how to place them, and on my particular vehicle, that's a superb add-on. I find that when I'm doing complicated modeling, I use NecWinSynth model builder, and then I feed that back into EasyNet and do my modeling in EasyNet because I'm just comfortable with it. But in any case, it sounds like you pretty much got things in hand. If you can figure out how to get that lead from your window back up to the roof. The other thing that I just discovered here in our first big sandstorm of the year is that there actually are people that make white duct tape. And since our windows here are aluminum frames that are painted white, it was very useful for keeping the sand out. But it also works very well when you're taking and sticking that white coax down. M0HBR, this is AG5RS.
AG5RS, M0HBR. All right, Ron. Well, your mention of the sandstorms there reminds me that you are in an exotic location, even more exotic than mine. And I guess that's a theme on solder smoke. So far, all of our all of our guests here have been in what would be considered kind of exotic locations. We had Farhan from Hyderabad, and we had Mike was up in Alaska, of course, and I've been London, Rome, and then we had Andy in South Africa. So we're kind of circling the globe here. I hope I haven't left anybody out. But so maybe on the next go around, tell us a little bit about Dubai and where you are and what's that like. People ask me from time to time. I get emails saying, "Tell us more about Rome." And little by little, I think I've been letting people get a little bit of travelogue here. But the knack, of course, is the important thing to talk about. And I'm glad you said that about the acceptability of this kind of cable TV coax. The reason I'm glad is because I already tacked it down. And if you said it was for some reason really wrong or not going to work. I was going to have to rip the whole thing up, which would have been bad for morale here at M0HBR stroke Italy Zero. But I've got it from the window that I want to send the antennas out of, all the way into the shack. I've got to get it through one plasterboard wall, but I'll work on that. And my plan is that, well, I got the HW8 station set up right now, and I've got everything set up. I've got it ready to go. And the thing is, I'm going to just run the coax into the HW8, and then take it out to the window and put a little tuner, a little homebrew random wire tuner that I could sit right on the windowsill, and just tune up with that right there, and then that'll keep the SWR on the wire down. Not that it's that important, like you say, at those frequencies, of course, it's not that big a deal. But just to tune it up a little bit, and then that should be it. Hopefully I'll make some contacts here. The fiber optic cable is great, unless somebody drags an anchor across it. But it's just not the same. And even with little internal antennas here in the shack, I've been able to fire up the HW8 and hear little bits of CW signals there. And it's made me nostalgic. I need to get on the air. I need to wiggle the ether here from Rome. Get some electromagnetic radiation flying out of this place. We'll have to get going on it. HE5RS, M0HBR.
Okay, great. Thanks very much for that, Ron, and we'll continue next week. That's it from Rome. It's about time for me to get going at work, unfortunately. But hope everybody has a good weekend and a good week ahead, and we'll be looking forward to making the next solder smoke here from Rome. 7-3 from the Eternal City.